Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here on Circles of Change. And you know, it's one thing to go from a subject like observation in the context of negativity and also Mark's words on accountability. So it's a real joy now to flip the hatch, and we're going to use that word positivity and, in fact, positive psychology, and welcome a real expert in that field, Caroline Adams Miller, on the line. Hello, Caroline. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm super. How are you?
I just couldn't be better, you know, continuing the new year, as I know we're going to with our conversations. Let me do a brief introduction. Caroline is an internationally known coach, author, and motivational speaker on the topic of goal accomplishments and its connection with happiness, and how that can actually be applied to one's life for maximum transformation and growth. Her new book, Creating Your Best Life, is the outgrowth, actually, of her capstone project at the University of Pennsylvania's Master's in Applied Psychology program. Caroline is giving that mass market audience now, or us practitioners, as I often say, an evidence-based engaging guide on how to set and accomplish your goals with some research-tested tools. A pioneer now for over two decades in the areas of change and goal accomplishment, Caroline has appeared on many television and radio programs and been featured in both national and international magazines and newspapers. She speaks at corporate retreats, motivational seminars, professional gatherings about the living your best life, and works as a professional coach in groups and individuals. So for many of you, of course, that follow the show, we're probably going to be two peas in a pod on that one. She's author of five best-selling works since 1988. She's ahead of me on that one. I haven't done my first one. And that have been translated actually in multiple languages. And also, Caroline was the first positive psychologist on satellite airways with XM Radio's Positive Tip of the Day in 2007. And now she's the monthly happiness expert on TV in D.C., as well as an adjunct faculty member at the University of Texas at Dallas. So where do we start? Why don't we anchor an understanding, Caroline, the field of positive psychology. What is that?
Oh, what a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can do it justice in a few sentences, but it is basically the study of the science of flourishing. And what are the qualities, what are the components that allow us to be at our best? And when people are at their best, when institutions are at their best, when families are at their best, what are the qualities that are being viewed or observed or experienced at that moment? So we all have strengths. The question becomes, how do we build on what's already there that's good, as opposed to the old Western medical model, which really permeated consulting in every other field, including coaching, which is, you know, what's broken and how do we fix it?
Isn't that true? In fact, how many of us in the work environment, you complete a project, even if it's wildly successful, and everybody wants to have what, and even the word, a post-mortem. Where we go now and flesh out all the things we did wrong. Not that we shouldn't learn from those and indeed redirect ourselves and change the process so it doesn't happen again. But to start from a positive place is so much more important. I think that word you said, the science of flourishing, is important. This isn't about personal satisfaction or customer satisfaction or employee satisfaction. I mean, that is to one place to go. It's one place to get to, but we're talking about taking up hugely a notch to fulfillment, flourishing, and maybe even going places that you never dreamed you could get to.
Right, and it's also just paying attention to what's going on in your own life, what's going on in your brain, what are you thinking about, what are you doing, what are the routines that are in your life that are familiar to you, and who are the people in your lives? Are they black holes? Are they bright lights? I mean, what is the ratio of positivity to negativity in your own life? And it's not just a Pollyanna approach to let's, you know, paste a smile on our faces and let's all be happy now, kind of the up with people approach. It's really about being over this 3-to-1 ratio, 3 positives to 1 negative, because when you're above this well-known ratio, which is, you know, studied, validated by mathematicians and researchers all over the world, across families and you name it, people are more curious, they are more successful, they are more effective in their jobs. They think of new solutions to problems.
That's what I was going to say. You're open to possibilities because you just have yourself in a whole different place.
Well, this is Barbara Fredrickson's work, and others as well, but really Barbara Fredrickson, who wrote the book Positivity. She's at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. It's really important that people know who are the players in this field, not the self-proclaimed happiness experts, mm-hmm. but who are the people who've done the research? Who's solid? Who's credible? Barb Fredrickson is one of them. Sonia Lubomirsky is another. I mean, you have to know who they are, but one of the things Barb found is that it's to our survival benefits to be over 3-to-1. It actually allowed our species to survive because when you're over 3-to-1, you build resources with other people. You build bridges instead of burning them. You do come up with more solutions. You're more zestful. You're more curious. You learn more. Your eyes are even wider open. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you actually take in more from the environment. You're less cynical. You're less likely to notice racial differences. Really to our benefit to educate ourselves about what is positive psychology, the science of well-being. What does it mean for us? And my contribution was to really be the first person to take the science of happiness. I got a master's degree at Penn a few years ago with Marty Seligman. Only, you know, a few dozen people were let into this program the first year. It's still very select and very small, and people come from all over the world, but it hit me like a thunderbolt that fall of 2005 that nobody in my coaching field had ever introduced me to the science of goal setting. There's something called goal setting theory. And people with high self-efficacy, people who set and accomplish goals, actually are in a greater state of flourishing. And that moment transformed my work from a job to a calling. I loved what I did, but I suddenly realized that I had the tools to alter people's lives. If I could help them set and achieve the right goals, which would then, you know, contribute to their flourishing, but also it's bidirectional. People become successful because they're happy.
Exactly.
You don't become,
yeah.
you don't get happy because you're successful. So people do need to understand that is such a fundamental fact we need to get.
That's where you start. Well, I said in the introduction, of course, Caroline, that you've written four other books. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you've now written a fifth, it's different than the first four. It was done with a different premise, different thought of mine. Mm-hmm. Take us to that place.
Well, the first book came out in 1988. It became a bestseller, but in a totally different field. I was the first major author of an autobiography, major mm-hmm. autobiography, about recovering from bulimia.
Right.
And it was published by Doubleday. I was on every talk show in the world. It exploded in my face because for the first time people were willing to hear that we weren't all these elite, white, kind of entitled, privileged girls who were just kind of eating too much. I hated every day of my life for 8 years. I struggled in silence, and I went to Harvard, and I remember looking around at Harvard thinking, why are we all doing this to ourselves? So what's interesting is that book in 1988 led directly to my fifth book. I mean, so it's been an evolution. I did become fascinated by how do people accomplish huge goals, like saving their own life? What is the pursuit of excellence? Yeah. What are the right goals? And how do you become the best version of yourself you can be? So in many ways, my ability to save my own life, before there was any treatment protocol agreed upon, nobody knew how to treat people like us. We weren't even in the DSM-3. It was just a complete unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just began to help other people accomplish their goals, which then led me into positive psychology. My next book is the sequel to My Name is Caroline, because now I see in hindsight how all the application of positive psychology could have helped me get better so much more quickly and efficiently 20-some years ago.
Isn't that something? So truly the metaphor of the circle of change, as we use here on the show, that's exactly where you are, that piece of 1988, and now here you are circling back, but now you're going to take it to a new place.
Well, and just to take that metaphor even a little bit further, I have been in recovery for well over 20 years. There are no books about people who've been in recovery for several decades. There just aren't, which is stunning to me,
mm-hmm.
because people don't have any hopefulness. But one of the things I stumbled upon, which I didn't even realize was an unhealed part of my recovery, was my eating disorder took away a lot of things, including my swimming career. I went back into swimming as a master's swimmer about 7 or 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and as I got into the pool and began to train and compete of my own volition, because I wanted to be there, but without an eating disorder, it healed something that I didn't even know wasn't healed.
Oh.
Yeah. I went back and closed the circle on a variety of things, right, including playing the piano. I don't think therapists really do understand all of this yet. I don't know any therapists who are saying, let's go back and reintroduce the things in your life that your eating disorder took away from you. Let's complete that now in a very different way.
And in fact, usually it's to go back just to let go of things, not to pull them forward again.
To embrace them.
Embrace them, yeah.
Right. It was just one of those moments. And what even made it better was I walked out onto a pool deck at 5 a.m. one morning, and there in front of me was the coach, 1956 Women's Olympic coach, who used to be my coach, my first coach, who knew me when I was bulimic, didn't know I was bulimic, but to be training under him as a healthy 40-some-year-old woman, as opposed to a, you know, 15, 16-year-old, talk about completing the circle. I was able to embrace and stand. Here I am. I'm in one piece. I can train under you in a very different mindset. I'm happy now, and I'm happy for all the right reasons.
Isn't that lovely? Well, you said in the opening remarks here this idea of getting three positives over one negative, and you also referred to the fact of the importance of the kind of people that we surround ourselves with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are really foundational for setting goals, whether you call them resolutions or intentions, correct?
It is, and they're two very separate areas of discussion. The one I want to grab onto first, because we may run out of time here, is you really do have to pay attention to who is in your life. And you have to be very thoughtful and very choosy about who is closest to you, because the social contagion research, really coming out of Harvard Medical School in a torrent, really, and other places, shows that you do become who you value and who you spend time with.
Right.
And even the emails you open, the phone calls you answer, those people, their opinions, the words they use, their impact on you, really can undermine even the best set goals, the most intrinsic goals, you know, the quote-unquote SMART goals, which I really don't quite agree with, and my book goes into why. But I think it's the Petri dish that we live and work in.
Yeah, that's right, right.
That's critical. And again, my book was the first one to take a look at that and say, okay, here's how you set goals, the approach goals, not the avoidance goals, and so on. Really laid it out, self-determination theory, but in a very readable way. And then I said, let's take a look at the people around you, the Petri dish. And do you have grit? Do you have this quality of being able to get back up, the whole idea of being resilient? And resilient, grit implies resilience for long-term goals that have short-term setbacks. We have the least gritty generation of all time in the new millennials.
Mm-hmm.
These are kids who have been protected from really having any kind of trauma in their lives. And since you're in Tucson, it is important to introduce the whole idea, because, you know, the nation's really been traumatized by
Absolutely.
What happened in Tucson, is that people do get stronger as a result of facing and overcoming challenging things. There's a whole field about post-traumatic growth. All we hear about is post-traumatic stress disorder. Guess what? You know, you don't want to have so few incidents of trauma in your life that you don't have an opportunity to see what you're capable of, you know, to reach in and find out what your strengths are. So there really is something to be said for all of us developing that resilience from not being quitters. I'm really appalled by how many parents let their kids quit.
Well, let me even take this to a very personal reaction. You mentioned our experiences here in Tucson. That news broke in the middle of our show, Caroline. And so I, of course, then with my guests needed to navigate not knowing when the next break would come and what the context would be that would be brought to us. And in reflection afterwards, I realized that your comment about resilience, that, you know, I was so grateful for all of those 25 years of tough leadership challenges in corporate America to almost on instinct prepare me, I believe, to navigate with my guests and those listeners that hour and a half, plus deal with the aftershock afterwards. So, you know, to your point, there is tremendous gifts in the tougher things we go through in our life. And, oh, by the way, it's important we go through that so we can prepare for the future.
Well, right, and that we actually stand and look back at
yes.
the things that we have overcome. One of the things that I find really interesting is there's a study of happy families. It's not a large body of literature to draw upon, but one of the things you find in happy families is that they have stories of overcoming
mm-hmm.
that are told and retold. And what it does is it gives children who are growing up security, that they can overcome things, that the outside world isn't a hostile place, you know, that people often reach in and provide a helping hand when necessary, that they're there for you. When you watch this coverage In Tucson, you hear about this remarkable 20-year-old intern who'd been on the job for, what, 1 or 2 days?
5 days, exactly, yep.
5 days. He, you know, he steps in, he saves this, you know, his congresswoman's life. I mean, everyone says he's a hero, but basically that's what we do. People who are courageous don't see themselves as courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And yet upon reflection, one of the things we can learn is we can rise to the challenge even if we're not sure we can. So we really have to not shirk from tough things. This is something that I'm really, really saying often in all of my speeches and with my clients is make this the year of going on a hero's journey. Do hard things, things that you're not sure you're capable of, because research shows, I've got a favorite piece of research from the University of San Francisco called the No Pain, No Gain Research, that it's at the end of the day when you're either consciously or unconsciously reviewing your day, the things that build authentic self-esteem, the things that you're proud of, are actually the things that you may not have enjoyed doing. Hard things, things outside your comfort zone. The happiest people go outside their comfort zone in pursuit of hard things. And too many of us do not do that, and we actually meet the definition of languishing, not flourishing. So everyone should take a hard look at themselves and ask themselves, am I doing what the hardest possible things are for me? And it could be a variety of different things. It could be being more extroverted could be the hardest thing somebody could do. But am I doing the hardest things that can make me the best version of myself right now? And what am I role modeling for the people around me?
Precisely. And then also, you know, this idea of quitters. You know, I was deluged with people saying, my gosh, you're part of the, you are in the swim of the negative discourse of talk radio that now that's being criticized so much. Hmm. And I said, okay, so why are you bringing this to my attention? I have every intention of staying the course and doing exactly what you and I are doing today, which is giving people outlets for hope, dialogue, and opportunity.
I don't understand the criticism.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right over my head. I don't get it. I'm not on that kind of energy level, whatever you want to call it.
Is that true? You said the research says about having 3 positives over 1 negative. So
yeah.
You went through that kind of quick. Could you just explain what you mean by that?
Sure. Okay. At its very basic level, our brains grab onto negative things, negative events. They occupy more real estate in our brain for all kinds of reasons. The most basic one is that our last major evolution of our brains was in the Ice Age, and that was when you really had to identify, you know, immediate threats to your safety, the saber-toothed tiger, you know, the predators around you, and you need to be able to react. It saved your life. However, we don't live in that kind of treacherous environment anymore, yet our brains still allow negativity to predominate. So what researchers have found, Barb Fredrickson, John Gottman up at the University of Washington in his love lab, what they've found is that the best marriages, the best relationships, water down that negative with at least 3 positives in order to allow you to be at a basic level of flourishing, to be optimistic, to be hopeful. You don't want to be under 3-1. And Barb says very regularly that the only way to change that ratio is to either add more positives or reduce the negatives. So we have volitional control in many cases over how do we deal with a very negative environment that we might be in. The optimal ratio for business teams, for marriages, for relationships, for all kinds of situations is 5 or 6-1.
Yeah, okay, right.
Now, one interesting thing I absolutely have to add. If you're at 11-1, 11 positives to 1 negative, it is just as damaging as being below 3-1.
Because it's the Pollyanna factor then.
Absolutely. It's an unreal air. Children begin to disbelieve what they see around them, what they hear. It's a very unreal approach to life to only have praise and positive things. And, you know, there is negativity for a reason. It actually sends us in the right direction or causes us to pay attention.
And also build our muscle to then, to your point earlier about resilience.
Right, exactly.
Right. Well, now there's a connection also between risk-taking into this dialogue. Risk-taking and happiness. How does that play into the kind of work you do as well?
Well, okay. So one of the things I think is particularly effective about working coaches who are trained in positive psychology, goal setting theory, the rest of it, is that in order for people to achieve really valued goals, they have to take risks. And yet that's what most of us don't want to do because we don't know the outcome. And so I find that one of the main partnerships I have with clients is that we partner in discussing and creating what kind of risks they're willing to take. You know, they build up to it, they build their muscle of mastery, they take small risks, and they build up to big risks, but ultimately, there's absolutely no way to avoid risk-taking if you want big rewards in life. And there's a tipping point. One of the things you do find is that people regret short-term the risks they take that don't work out. Mm-hmm. You know, the risk you take, the resume you send out, the relationship you pursue, that doesn't get what you want. However, the tipping point is somewhere between 3 to 4 years after that risk, and what you find is that people regret more the risks they didn't take.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, and so women, since you and I are women, I'm going to throw this out there. One of the interesting bodies of research is on women at 48 and 49 who are going through a midlife review, and they begin to assess what regrets they have, the things that they really do wish they had either been bolder about or pursued or thought about, whatever. And the only way to emerge from that period in your life, because regrets are normal, they carry a certain energy with them, we all have them, but the only way to take that energy and convert it into a positive is to set goals and have accountability to pursue those goals. It's not enough to set goals. And again, this is where I think coaching is so powerful. It's why coaching's growing. It occupies a space in change that wasn't being filled effectively by anybody else.
Yes, and the coach meaning individuals that help you address and ask and pose the right questions, necessarily just mentor and guide an easy path for you. It's from the inside out.
It's the it's asking the right questions. It's eliciting answers from your clients because we don't have the answers for our clients. I mean, they come to us for change. We can't possibly know what it is they're truly going after. But you allow them to author their own change, support them in the change, help them brainstorm their ways out of short-term, you know, challenges. But it's the accountability that's also huge. You can't change alone. It does take a village, but it takes the right people. Going back to the black holes, you absolutely cannot change in partnership with a black hole because they will undermine you whether they know it or not. And there's a lot I can say about that.
You bet. For our guests that may have just turned in, we're speaking with Caroline Adams Miller about her latest book, Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. So what's the deal with the lists?
Well, with the list. Okay, so when the book came out, it just went paperback. It's been out for 2 years now, but it just went on the Nook and just came out in paperback. Is lists are really just a handy hook upon which to hang this goal accomplishment idea. Because the reason I wrote this book, it was my capstone at Penn, and then became a book. I wrote it very, very quickly. It was a great opportunity. But is because there were no books in the self-help field on how to set and accomplish goals with any research attached to it. Mm-hmm. I was totally appalled to go into bookstore after bookstore. I'm an author, I'm a reader, but to see book after book after book by authors, I'm sure we all know who they are, but they would pass off urban legends like the Harvard study of 1950, and they'd say, here's the research. And what I realized after getting this tough training at Penn is that there was no research. These were anecdotes. These were urban legends.
Exactly.
And I thought people deserve better. So my book is the absolute first one in the mass market, in the self-help section, that actually tells you how to accomplish goals without this whole secret approach, law of attraction, law of intention. You know, this is about facts. How do you create, self-author, manage, and sustain change in your life? And I married it in with the science of positive psychology because you can't talk about goals without talking about flourishing. You
exactly.
have to be flourishing.
That circles it right back. Well, Caroline Adams Miller, thanks so much for joining us here on Circles of Change. Again, for our listeners, Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. You can also learn about Caroline's coaching services, her speaking engagements at carolinemiller.com, or the website for the book specifically, creatingyourbestlifelist.com. Thanks a lot, Caroline, and I think you've put us absolutely on the right track here as January continues to evolve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays 10 to noon right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.